Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I love it. And, and it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Listeners, today I welcome Laura Stitzel. Laura is an illustrator, designer, and animator, and has been in both Australia and Canada. Laura's work has appeared in many children's TV shows, such as Emmy Award-winning Peg and Cat and Arthur and Arthur. Today I chat to Laura about her work illustrating Elliot Perlman's children's book, The Adventures of Cat Finkel. I spoke to Elliot Perlman in a previous episode about the writing process of The Adventures of Cat Finkel, and now I speak to Laura about her illustrations for the book. I'm your host, Danny V. Thank you so much for joining me, Laura. It's lovely to chat with an illustrator today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
In the last episode, I spoke with Elliot Perlman about The Adventures of Cat Finkel, and we talked about your beautiful illustrations and how old-worldly the book looked. So it's nice for this episode to make up a part two of that episode.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind words. That's a big compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not often I get to speak to, you know, a lot of the people who put all the components of the novel together, so this will be really interesting. Uh-huh. Now, I love your work in the novel, and what I noticed first was the absolute joy of the drawings. Can you tell us about the process of illustrating for this particular book?
The joy, that's nice. Sure. So I came onto this project very confidently, which is good. Usually when I am brought on to illustrate a book, there's kind of a pitch process. So the publisher will want me to draw a couple of characters, and then that goes, you know, in a pitch against other illustrators, and then it's chosen from that. But this one, Elliot had already seen a couple of my illustrations as well as, you know, a couple of other illustrators, and he told me at the end of this whole process that he just said, nah, her. Like, I just like her style, so let's go with that. So that was actually so nice to, you know, do away with that nerve-wracking pitch process and just be like, okay, I'm the person he wants, let's go with this kind of thing.
Was it a joyful experience? Because there's so much, even though the book deals with some serious issues, the pictures are just so beautiful and joyful and fun.
It was so fun. I love animals. I love drawing animals. As you know my work at all, you obviously know that's my most favourite thing to draw. So that was great. But also I just really love Elliot's book. I love his writing. The dialogue that he gave the characters just fits really well with my sensibilities as an illustrator. They have this kind of quaint way of talking. Everything's a little bit proper, a little bit old-fashioned. And I just really, like, resonated with that. So I hope that came through in the drawings, but that was something that really, like, sparked with me.
I was thinking it must have been a tricky balance because the novel does deal with some important issues like prejudice and learning to love and accept yourself. And yet, you know, you've got to sort of also make sure it's okay for children and you want to have a bit of joy in there. Was this a bit of a challenge for you?
A little bit. I think the thing that I really tried to nail with this, and it's what I try to get in most of my illustrations, I can't, you know, I'm perhaps not the most accurate illustrator. I can't guarantee I'm going to draw the most, you know, anatomically correct Dalmatian or whatever. But what I try to really get is the expressions on their faces and the relationship between the characters. So there's one that I'm thinking of in particular, which is there's an illustration where there's a wolf type dog, and he's talking to his puppies, and the puppies are actually telling him something about it's kind of an anti-racist message, right? The puppies are saying, well, just because that animal isn't like us doesn't mean that we should be mean to it. That kind of conversation. I don't know if you can recall that particular moment.
Yeah, I'm looking. I think it's page 144.
That illustration comes to mind particularly because it's kind of an interesting moment. It's not often that you read about children teaching their parents something. And I tried really hard to get the expressions on their faces, but also the kind of interaction between them. That the puppies are looking at their dad going, you know, we know this is a bit of a hard thing to hear, but we're really trying to communicate something to you here. It is difficult. And I really spent hours and hours and hours getting that right. It will be, you know, a matter of tilting that animal's head a tiny bit, no, tilting it back a tiny bit more, maybe raising their eyes up just a tiny bit lower, you know, that kind of thing, just over and over and over again until I think, yep, that's the expression that I'm going for, that's reading now.
And isn't that wonderful? Like, I always talk about the writing process and how long that process is, but you kind of never think about those little tiny details. I think Elliot was saying something about, just giving feedback about, the dog's snout needs to be a little bit longer, and those kind of real finite details that, you know, you don't think about because you just enjoy the book, and, I mean, that's the point of it, really. But it's so interesting that, you know, those little details that you had to keep going through. And I'm looking at that picture now. It was on 144, and it's just such a gorgeous picture because, you know, Greyston was meant to be this really vicious dog or wolf, but then once he's with these other little puppies, you know, there's expression changes.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you see him a little earlier being a big meanie, and then, he changes. Yeah, there is a lot of sort of back and forth, and I was so grateful to Elliot. This might be something you were going to bring up later, but Elliot was very sort of gave me a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We did have those back and forth about the Dalmatian's nose. And the editor and I had a few hilarious conversations about the way that llamas' ears sit. And, you know, little details like that you don't think about, like, I know what a llama looks like, but then it's like, oh, actually, could its ears go down for this one? That kind of thing. And I remember at one stage saying to our editor, who's a little bit of a go-between between Elliot and I sometimes, I said, look, I know Elliot is saying that the Dalmatian snout should be pointier, but I think he means longer. To me, that was a very important distinction.
Yeah,
and from
absolutely.
That little revelation, I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing now, and I could draw the nose properly.
Well, he was saying he had a Dalmatian as a child, so he must have had this very vivid image of what, you know, his pet looked like, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. He did. And it's funny that, I mean, I love drawing these dogs and cats. I have a cat and I love dogs. I've been around dogs a lot in my life. And it's so nice to have such a close reference point in your mind to go to for expressions and for how they move, all that kind of thing.
Was your cat going, why are you looking at me so intently?
Yeah. I mean, yes, you always cats always look like that, don't they? Like, stop looking at me. But there's a dog, Borzoi, a Russian wolfhound, mm-hmm. in the novel. And, of course, they're very rare, and I didn't really know a lot about them. And, I know greyhounds, and they're kind of similar. But I was struggling a little bit with the Borzoi, and there was one afternoon I remember I was in my studio. I was drawing this Borzoi, or is that even how you say it? I'm not sure.
I'm just gonna trust you on that.
Okay. I was drawing this Borzoi all day, and I had, you know, a page full of, you know, a whole screen full of Google images of these dogs, trying to find out how they moved and what they look like and so on. And I was struggling with it a little bit. It was a long, hot summer that I illustrated this book in. And I went for a walk just to clear my head, and I went to the park opposite the studio where I work, and there was lots of dogs. And would you believe it? There was two Borzois playing in the park
at
that moment. Yeah, and I went up to the owner. I said, you won't believe this. I've been studying these dogs all day. And I just got to watch them play. And then I asked her really strange questions like, so would their ears go down if they were angry? Or just asking these really particular questions about how they move. But it was such a lovely coincidence.
Wow, that's sometimes the universe works in your favor.
That's right. It was like this living, breathing Google Images in the park right near me.
That's incredible. Now, what I wanted to ask was, obviously, Elliot would have a vision of his book and what he was writing about. And how do you maintain your own individual style while still trying to meet that vision that the author and the editor and the publisher have? How do you all come together to do that?
Well, that's a really big question.
It is.
Yeah, I think, well, we were extremely fortunate in that we didn't really have any, I didn't feel like there was any moments where he looked at something that I had done and went, whoa, no, going totally in the wrong direction. Apart from maybe the nose length. I think it comes from kind of a gradual narrowing down, a kind of like whittling away process. So really early on I remember doing, you know, four kind of basic sketches of the two main characters and just doing them in four kind of different styles. I mean, obviously still my style, but different thickness of pen, different kinds of pen, different combination of watercolor and ink. You know, four different styles that I would be happy to go with either, and then showing them to our editor and to Elliot, and then getting a sense from them as to which one they liked the best and also what they liked about it. Like, oh, we like this one because it's got a lot of movement, or we like this one because it's a little bit more simple, or something like that, and then taking that direction and just honing in on those aspects that they like.
Yeah, that is something I noticed about the images. There's a lot of movement, you know, especially when she's dancing and flying. And it was really nice to see that movement in the pictures. They looked really fluid and beautiful.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, thank you. yeah, I've tried to get that. There's a lot of sort of action scenes in the book, so it's nice to try to capture that on paper, yeah.
Well, you had to get a flying cat in and a dancing cat, and you know, they can't be still, right?
Yeah, there was a little bit of discussion about how the tail would work as well. I remember sitting over coffee with a couple of friends about that, going, well, would it work like a helicopter, or would it rotate the other way like a rudder?
It's funny that you say that because when I was reading it about the flying cat, I'm like, oh, how does that work? Like, how does the cat, I don't know why I was thinking this because it's fiction, but I was thinking, oh, how does the cat fly? Like, does it have wings? And then I turn the page and it's got the helicopter tail.
And did that make sense?
Then it did. That's really clever. Of course I believe that a cat can fly now. Had you read any of Elliot's past work? Because what I found really interesting was that I was asking him about his process of writing for a children's novel being his first, but he said he took a lot of the same thematic ideas from The Street Sweeper, and I thought that was such an interesting way to mm-hmm. look at it.
I hadn't read his work. I knew who he was, and that was a big deal, but I have since, and I think I was even reading Seven Types of Ambiguity while we were in the early stages of developing this book, which was a bit of a weird thing to keep in my mind that this was the same person writing yes. these two completely different worlds. But I'm such a huge admirer of his. I think I'm a little bit fortunate that I maybe hadn't read it before, because I was, I could sort of approach the working relationship without being too intimidated.
Yeah.
Let's say. And now, I can just read his books and feel so grateful that he's now someone I consider to be a friend.
Yeah, that was my problem. I'd been a fan of his for decades, and I thought I definitely want to have him on the podcast. And when I finally did, I remember, this is going to be so embarrassing when he listens to this, but I remember it was like 2 minutes to the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, I don't think I can press the dial button. I was like, oh, no, I can't back out now. It's only 2 minutes. So I just forced myself to press the dial button on Skype. But it was a nerve-wracking minute because I'd been such a fan of his words. And I love Seven Types of Ambiguity. It's one of my favourite novels.
Well, he's not an intimidating person once you speak to him, is he?
Yes, no. So we spoke a little bit before the podcast, which was actually definitely in my favour.
Yeah.
So once we got to the recording, it was quite normal, and I was much less of a fangirl because he's, you know, obviously just such an articulate man and could speak very well about his work. But it was funny. I just remember that minute before I pressed dial. I'm like, I don't think I can do this. I did. Mm. Thankfully, it's a great episode.
That's good. Yeah, when we first met, we sort of had a meeting with our editor to put us two in touch. And she, our editor, works in Sydney and the two of us are in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the opportunity to catch up for coffee, you know, whenever we like, kind of thing. And when we, after we'd first met, we sort of said, oh, do you want to keep chatting? Our editor had to go off to another meeting. And we ended up talking for a really, really long time.
He's a great talker.
He is a great talker, and we just, you know, our lives are quite different, but we have quite a lot to connect on in terms of choosing to work in an artistic field rather than doing the 9-to-5 and all that that entails. And we also reminisce together quite a lot about what books we loved as kids,
mm-hmm.
Which was a lovely conversation. And as you know, you've commented that my work is quite old-fashioned, and I still really I'm drawing on books that I had as a kid more so than modern books. So that was a really lovely conversation to have.
Yeah, and you can tell just by, I told Elliot, I just loved holding this book. You know, it's this beautiful hardcover and it just looks like it's straight from the 1950s. Like, it's gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. What did you feel when you had like the hardcover in your hands and it was exactly kind of like the style that you liked to draw in?
Oh, well, I cried.
I would
have I'm not
too.
A big cryer, but I was so proud of this book. But the thought that I kept thinking when I was flipping through it is like, I would have loved this when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes me feel really nice.
Yeah, because it is. It's a book that you read and read aloud. My children are small, so I'd be reading aloud to them. And then it's so beautiful to touch. And then you've got the visual images in it. So it's, you know, tapping into all these kind of experiences, I think, when you're reading it, which I think is so great.
Oh, it's so important, isn't it? Just the way a book feels and the way it opens and how heavy it is and all that stuff. I mean, that's largely out of my control. That's all up to the designers and publishers and so on. But I think they've done such an amazing job with this. And yeah, you're right. It's just a pleasure to pick up and flip through.
That's right. It makes nerds like us just super happy.
Right. It's for books like this that we keep, you know, making real books.
Yeah, and they're gorgeous. That's right. And you can't, I mean, I have a Kindle and I like reading books on a Kindle when it's convenient, but nothing compares to the feel of this book, you know. So I don't think that will ever go away because it's so nice to have it in your hands.
Mm.
Now, the novel was set in Amsterdam. Have you been to Amsterdam or what was your process of research for the setting?
I haven't been to Amsterdam, no, which Elliot was quite concerned about, I think. He asked me several times, like, do you need any more help with Amsterdam?
Didn't offer to take you on a trip to Amsterdam? That would be nice.
That would have been a nice research trip. No, but, I mean, I use Google Images and Street View and try to find the most sort of iconic buildings and strips of buildings that I could find and use those. I mean, it is set in Amsterdam, but it's not really set in, I know Elliot talked about this a little bit in his interview, it's not really set in real Amsterdam. I think we were both trying to conjure this place that's kind of an imagined and fairy tale-ish version of a city that we all know. So I think, you know, I keep saying drawing on, which is a horrible pun, but I'm just going to keep using it. Drawing on my kind of almost cliched and perhaps a little bit stereotypical ideas of Amsterdam is not necessarily a bad thing in this case.
And I guess it gave you a bit of freedom being that kind of Amsterdam that you and Elliot created for the book.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's a really lovely way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely. And I knew I'd kind of nailed it one day when a friend from the studio just dropped by and looked at some of the buildings I was drawing and said, oh, is that Amsterdam? And I'm like, yes, it's Amsterdam. They do have certain building types that are quite iconic, which, I mean, if I had been there, may have been a little bit more obvious to me. But I knew from that comment that I had picked out the most Amsterdam-ish Amsterdam buildings I could, so that's good.
Thank goodness for Google, right?
Oh, yeah, I don't know how I would have had to spend a long time in the library if it wasn't for Google.
It was lovely for me. I have relatives in Holland, and my dad, you know, he grew up in Holland, so it was lovely to not only read a book about Amsterdam, which I don't think I've read one that I can think of, and then seeing, you know, the drawings of it as well kind of made me feel I can't say homesick, it's not my home, but, you know, second homesick, I guess, you know, because some of my family live there. So it was such a lovely read on a number of levels for me.
Yeah, that's really nice. And that's what we're trying to do is sort of a nostalgic idea of a city. Yeah,
nostalgic's a beautiful word to describe the book. Yeah. Now, how did working on this book compare to things that you've done before?
So I'm an author as well. I have my own, I have one book out at the moment that I have both written and illustrated. And this was my first book illustrating for somebody else,
mm-hmm.
Which is different. And I think when I speak to people, they mostly assume that would be a worse experience in some way because you have to do what someone else wants. I found it the opposite. I loved working with somebody else. Obviously, we had a very fortunate, very pleasant experience as, you know, teammates on this. But I think, you know, when you write your own stories and when you draw your own things that have come from your own imagination, you're only limited by your imagination, but conversely, I am limited by my imagination. So Elliot could provide me with scenes and characters that I would never dream up, and that pushed me a little bit further, I think,
mm-hmm.
Which is really nice.
Because writing can sometimes be quite an isolating experience, so this must have been very different.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, your book is Mr. Mo Starts to Grow. Tell us about Mr. Mo.
That's right. So it's actually, he's a monster. Mo is short for monster. So it's a picture book, and it's about a girl who has a monster friend that we're not entirely sure if he's a stuffed toy or not. It's a little bit ambiguous. But then he starts to grow, gets bigger, and yeah, the story is about how their friendship changes and develops because of that growing process.
It's a beautiful cover. I really love it. And I can see this gigantic monster kind of, you know, coming right through. But it's really lovely. And it focuses on friendship, the book.
That's right. Yeah, it's about friendship too. Yeah, when I look at that book, I wonder if it's because it's all mine. I still get a little bit anxious about it and a little bit sort of like looking at it through, you know, my hand over my face kind of thing. Whereas, yeah, it's funny, I feel so much more relaxed about Catfinkle. It's like, okay, yep, I did it. It's what Elliot wanted. It's good. And I can, yeah, maybe enjoy it slightly more.
Yeah, and the illustrations look beautiful, and it kind of looks like a book that, you know, friendship can be found in all different places.
Yeah, that's nice. Right. I guess, yeah, similar to Catfinkle, yeah. Mr. Mo is about unlikely friendships. Mm. And it's also about presumptions. The monster, when he starts to grow, he thinks, I'm going to be too scary. I'll hide away. Whereas his friend Jane is okay with him being big, and she's fine with the change, and she still wants to be his friend. So yeah, there's that also that similar thread that in Catfinkle there's a lot of presumptions about, we can't be friends because we look different, or we wouldn't want to, you know, I wouldn't want to tell my secret to her because she's a dog or whatever. Whereas those presumptions, I think, get us in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to Elliot about this as well, about having as much literature as possible and education for kids to not do this, you know, to, and he was saying to judge people by the content of their character, which is so true. Mm. And I think both those books really do that well. And I just love books that you can read at face value. So you can just read about a monster and a girl or a cat and a dog who, you know, strike up a friendship, but you can also read it at so many other levels as well. And they can really open up conversations for you to have with your kids at any age, I think.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I find when I've, you know, when I've been doing promotion for Mr. Mo and reading it at bookstores and so on, I find that the let's say that owner of the bookstore initially is like, oh yeah, that's a nice book, it's cute. And then once they hear me read it again, so they maybe read it for the second time, then they say, oh, there's actually quite a lot in that. Yeah, that's actually really, really nice. So they sort of have a deeper understanding of it. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, the morals and the message aren't really jumping off the page at you. It takes a little bit of maybe letting it settle for that to come to the surface, which I kind of really like about my own work. And I think Elliot shares that sensibility with me, that it's like, it's, you know, his work isn't ever preachy or moralistic. It's just a story that perhaps the first time kids will just think it's a fun story about a cat and a dog, but then after some thinking or maybe another read, you realise there's quite a lot more going on.
Yeah, and how wonderful is that? And I really don't think you can start these conversations too early. I mean, obviously you'll change them and adapt them, you know, according to age, but I just read this beautiful book to my children who are 4 and 6 called Zenobia, and it's about a girl who, you know, can't find her home because she's a refugee. And, you know, I had this conversation with my kids about, oh, how sad is this? And should people be allowed to, you know, find safety? And I just don't think these ideas, you know, should be explored just when kids are older, because I think it's really important for them to form that kind of empathy at a really young age. So I think, you know, Kat Finkel and Mo, they do that really well.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, there's a lot of subtleties to those feelings that that perhaps, need to be there from quite early on for you to have that ingrained, I guess. I don't know, but I think that kids are able to understand a lot of subtlety.
Absolutely.
Perhaps they can't express what they've learned, but I really think that they can absorb so much, you know.
And it's not like you've ever heard anyone say, oh, you have too much empathy. I mean, you know, I don't think that gets used as an insult. So
that's absolutely right. Yeah.
So what's next for you, Laura? You've done this beautiful book, a book on your own that is wonderful. What's next for you? Have you got something in the pipeline?
A couple of things. I'm working on my next book of my own, which is hopefully still, you know, it's just sort of at the planning stages at this point. Working on a new picture book for somebody, you know, illustrating for another author with Scholastic. And I'm also at the moment doing a very fun job, which is illustrating some covers for a re-release of children's classics, which is so fun because I get to illustrate new covers for some of my absolute favourite books.
It seems being an author illustrator just makes your job and your creative process so much more interesting, because you get to do the covers and then write your own and then write your own book and collaborate with someone else. So it just sounds amazing.
I'm always jumping around between things. I also, I teach at universities. I teach illustration and animation. I also work in animation. I've been doing that for about 10 years, working in kids' TV. So I animate and paint backgrounds as well. So there's a lot of different things going on, and I think being open to having lots of different skills, you're always going to be switching and changing and using something you learnt over here, using it for a completely different task and so on. It can only help you get better, right?
Absolutely. Now my 4-year-old wanted to ask you a question, so if you've got 10 seconds, I'm just going to go grab her because she's been practicing.
Hello, how are you?
Good. The cat was funny because he can fly and dance. I hope he had fun drawing it.
I had so much fun drawing the cat. It was really fun because before I get to start drawing, I get to sit there and imagine all these fun things that Kat Winkle does. She does flying, she does dancing, she makes friends, so many fun things. I got to just sit and think about it, and then I get to draw it.
Wonderful. She's just nodding at the moment, which isn't great for a podcast, but she's very happy that she got to ask that because she's been practicing and flicking through the book and laughing hysterically at the cat, particularly when it was dancing. So thank you for that.
She's oh, like, my pleasure. That's really lovely.
Can I ask a question? I'm like, well, you can give it a crack. Why not?
Yeah, a little podcaster in the making
there. Yeah, four-year-old podcaster. I don't know, is that a some kind of record? Well, look, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's such a beautiful book, and I love the book that you have written as well. And the illustrations just capture the joy, the wonderful silliness, that beautiful, whimsical Amsterdam that we talked about, and also is reflective of the really important issues within the book as well. So thank you so much for your time, and I hope this, you know, gives people a greater insight of another little mini episode to attach to Elliot's, as well as, you know, you having some amazing work of your own.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.